Everybody likes, everybody loves this nibbuti. Whenever the mind has some, it really enjoys it. But nobody knows the name of it, so we thought we'd let you know. Everybody really goes for this nibbuti, even though the name of it isn't known. We're not sure exactly how to translate it into English, but it basically has the same as nibbana, only that nibbana is complete and perfect. It's final. Whereas nibbuti is temporary. It's not yet perfect. But it has the same basic meaning of coolness. We can call it cool life or cool living. If it's not yet complete and perfect, we call this cool living nibbuti. But if the cool living is complete and perfect, then we call it nibbana. This is the meaning of nirota, when all craving and attachment has been quenched, then there is cool living, either in the incomplete or the complete form. Now let's be helpful for us to know some more about perfect nibbana, perfect coolness. When the defilements of greed, hatred, and delusion have been cooled completely, when none of the defilements remain in even the least way, but still the mind discriminates between positive and negative. This is the first aspect or first stage of nibbana. Then when the defilements have been cooled completely, there's no greed, hatred, or delusion remaining in the least way, and the mind has no feeling or sense of positive and negative. That is the second aspect or stage of nibbana. The first one, where there's no defilement, the mind is completely cooled, but there's still this positive and negative. This is called sa upadisesa nibbana. Nibbana with a little fuel remaining, meaning the positive and negative. But then when there's no defilement and no positive, no negative, this is called anupadisesa nibbana. Nibbana without any of that fuel, any of that positive and negative remaining. To make it a little more concise, the first kind is when the mind still experiences positive and negative, but that positive and negative cannot concoct the self, cannot concoct self or ego. In the second kind, the mind doesn't experience positive or negative at all. And so, of course, no self could get concocted. So this is why we call it new life. The life that is beyond the world, that is above the world, or Lokuttara. Let's talk about Nirota some more. There's different kinds of nirota. There's the kind of nirota where craving is quenched, we could say, accidentally or coincidentally. There are times when because of the objects or the surroundings we're in, the situation around us, it makes it impossible for craving to arise. Sometimes our situation makes it impossible so that craving doesn't happen to us. And so that's one kind of nirota, coincidental nirota. It's coincidental depending on circumstances. It has nothing to do with our own effort or wisdom. Then there's the second kind, which comes from our own practice, where we control the mind, we supervise the mind so that craving doesn't arise. This quenching of craving through our own effort in practice is a second kind of nirota. And then there's a third kind, where all craving has been quenched completely. So there's not any possibility that any craving would arise again. All craving, attachment, and ignorance have been quenched. And this is perfect quenching. This, we no longer have to actively practice as before. Now it's automatic quenching. This third kind of quenching, this perfect quenching, is the quenching of the arahant, the awakened being, the perfected human being. Anapanasati, mindfulness with breathing, will enable us to discover and experience all three types of quenching. If we live with anapanasati, if we exist with anapanasati, then it's quite easy for the spontaneous, coincidental quenching to take place. It will happen quite often. And then through anapanasati, we are more and more able to quench things through our own practice. We have the knowledge, the understanding, and the ability in stronger ways. And then anapanasati gives us the possibility to get rid of the defilements so that there is the complete and perfect quenching. So all three kinds of quenching can be experienced through anapanasati. To completely explain how anapanasati leads to these three kinds of quenching would take quite a bit of time. To explain the methods and all that of anapanasati would take more time than we have, so we'll leave that for another time. But now we'd like to talk about some of the tricks we use in dealing with this situation. First of all, in dealing with, we don't attack the situation head on. We don't struggle head on, but we come at things from the back. We kind of sneak up on the problem from behind. We don't just plow right in straight at the problem. We sneak up on it from behind. What this means is we don't get in there and struggle with dukkha straight on, but we sneak around behind and remove the cause of dukkha. To get in there and fight it out with dukkha is a real hassle, and it's not very successful. The trick we use is to get there behind it and remove the cause. This is much more exquisite, and it works much better. So we've got a nice phrase in Thai that we'd like you to learn, because it explains this point quite well. It's a proverb. Aumai san ran ki, which in a crude way, it has a rather crude meaning, and so I'll translate it with some rather crude English words, which means to hit shit with a short stick. To hit shit with a short stick. Ki is feces or anything that's really dirty and stinking up the place. If we take, and if it's to clean it up, we've got to get rid of it. If we do that with a short stick, this means like they used to use sticks to scrape the toilets or to clean up the manure around the place. If you use a short one, it makes a real mess and you end up covering yourself with all this feces as you try to clean it up. It makes a real mess, stinks up the place. It's much better to use a long stick and then you yourself don't get dirty. So, attacking dukkha straight on is to our my son, Ron Ki, to take a short stick to beat shit. But we suggest the skillful means of using a long stick. It's much easier, it's much cleaner, and don't suffer so much. And then, even better than that, if you want to really be good at this, is don't let it shit at all. So this means is you don't have to put up with dukkha. We don't have to fight with dukkha. Just quench it at its cause. Quench it at the source and origin. There's no need to go through a lot of dukkha to suffer through it and go through all the hassles. But learn how to quench dukkha at its source. This is the trick we use. So now we'd like to mention certain synonyms of dukkha nirodha, because these will help us to understand dukkha nirodha quite easily. First is to calm all concoctions. To calm all concoctions. In Pali, sapa sankhara samato. All the meanings, all aspects of the concocting, when this is to quench, to calm this, is one aspect of, or one synonym of dukkha nirodha. The second is to throw away all the burdens. Just take all the burdens and chuck them out, chuck them away. This means all the burdens here means the five khandhas that are attached to. This means attaching, clinging to the five khandhas as I in mind. To take all this heaviness, the heaviness and burden of all that attachment and just throw it away. This is a second synonym. In Pali, it's sapupadi pati nitsako. The third one is danha kayo. Kayo means to end. So it's the ending of craving, to make craving end, to end craving. Then virako. This means the fading away of all that, whatever dies the mind, this attachment and everything that dies the mind, that dissolves and fades away until none of it is left. There's nothing dying the mind anymore. When the rakha has faded away, this is virako. And then next the word nibbanang, the last synonym of dukkha nirodha, the quenching of dukkha, is nibbanang, to make it cool, to make everything cool. So both physically, mentally, and spiritually, there's no aches, no pains, no problems, no hassles, no dukkha. Make everything cool. This is nibbanang, the last synonym of nirodha. So these, once we understand the meanings of these words, the meaning is quite beautiful. It's a quite beautiful sounding thing. So sometimes we just repeat these words to ourselves. Sabba sankhara samato sabupati pati nitsako virako tanhakayo virako niroto nibbana. These words have an excellent meaning, and it's possible to take this as a meditation, to take this as the object of the calm, clear mind. When the mind is calm and clear, it can put its attention and work on these things internally. Bring this into the mind and work on it within the mind. When we do this, it's called Dha Samati, to concentrate on Dhamma. But concentrate here not in a tense way, but with a still, calm, clear mind. In the Pali text, the Buddha calls it Dhamma Samadhi, but now nobody talks about it anymore. But it's possible to take these synonyms, or take Nirodha itself as an object of meditation. However, in practice, the fourth stage, or the fourth part of anapanasati, is this kind of Dhamma Samadhi. It doesn't go by this name, but in practice it has the same effect, the same result, to take quenching as the object of meditation. So this is basically included within anapanasati. You can go to Burma, Sri Lanka, India, Nepal, or wherever. And wherever you go, you will never hear about this. Nobody will be talking about Dhamma Samadhi. It may sound strange, but one can take Nibbana as the object of meditation, to take Nibbana itself as the thing to work on within the mind. This is, and in anapanasati, this is actually done, although it just goes by the name anapanasati. But it has this Dhamma Samadhi included, where the mind actually takes Nibbana as its object of study in contemplation. So to concentrate the mind upon, to gather the mind upon fully and focus it completely upon coolness, upon the quenching. This is what we mean by Dhamma Samadhi. We can do it anywhere. We don't have to go anywhere to do this kind of Dhamma concentration. Concentration on Dhamma. Or if we speak in a quite ordinary way for ordinary people, we can just say, aim for peace. Aim for peace. Or set your sights on calmness. Set your sights on calm. Whatever we do, aim for calm. Find what is calm and peaceful in any kind of thing we do. This is something that anybody can practice in any situation. We can aim for the peace and the calm that can be found within that activity, that situation, that thought, whatever. Nowadays, people around the world love to talk about peace and talk about making a peaceful world and these kind of things, but it never happens. There's a lot of talk about it in meetings, but it's never actually happening anywhere, because people don't know anything about dukkha nirodha. People don't understand, and they aren't even interested in quenching the certain things that need to be quenched. quenching ignorance, quenching craving, quenching attachment regarding the five khandhas. People don't understand anything about the quenching of dukkha. So then all the talk about peace and a peaceful world and peacefulness doesn't really lead anywhere, because people don't know how to do the quenching that is necessary for peace. One last thing we'd like to mention is what in Pali is called upaya. Upaya, which is often translated skillful means. In Thai, we can translate it as klep, which means to make it easier, make it faster, make it most efficient and successful. And we can actually use the English word trick for this. So we'd like to talk about another trick, or upaya. And this we can, in another metaphor for this, is to put salt into the salt. Something like this. Or something, a French fry, and you put it, dip it into sauce. So to take, dip the salt into the salt. Take salt and dip it into the salt. This is the trick we use to deal with this, our situation of dukkha. This means to take dukkha and dip it into dukkha. Use dukkha to solve dukkha. Or we can say, use danha to solve danha. Use craving to get rid of craving. Use craving to remove craving. This is a trick we can use. Or another idiom for this is to use thorns to pick out the thorn. If you step on a thorn and it gets stuck in your foot and then breaks off, it's very hard to get out. We can take two more thorns and then stick them in along the first one and pull out the first thorn. So use a thorn to pick out, to dig out the thorn. This is what we mean by dip the salt into the salt, or use dukkha to get free of dukkha. Use danha to get rid of, use craving to get rid of craving. This is a trick that we can use quite successfully. What we must observe is that it's a different kind of salt that we use. We don't use the same salt. There's this salt, and we bring in another kind of salt to dip in. Or we don't, to get that thorn out, we have to take another thorn to dig it out. So when we talk about using dukkha to get free of dukkha, using craving to get rid of the craving, it's a different kind of craving. It's not to use the same old craving, but to use a different kind of craving to get rid of the old stuff. So notice, although the name is the same, the meaning is different. Salt and salt, thorn and thorn, craving, craving. The names are the same, but the meaning is different. It's a different kind of salt, a different kind of thorn, a different kind of craving. So then, when it comes to using craving to get rid of craving, we don't use this new craving means something else. We can use the word danha, but we mean something different with it. We just mean a certain new kind of want, or a different kind of want. The old kind of want, that blind craving that comes from ignorance, is nothing but trouble. So we're going to use a a different kind of want or desire, or what we can call aspiration. Aspiration, the desire to be better, the desire to do better, to be better, to use this to solve the problem of dhanha. So it's, we use the same name, but there's an important difference in the meaning. We can't use that same old problem to solve the problem, but there's something similar which we can even give the same name that can help us to solve the problem. Within dukkha, there is the quenching of dukkha. The arising and existence of dukkha always contains within it the quenching of dukkha. They're not in separate places. Dukkha and the quenching of dukkha are always together. This means that if we look carefully into the dukkha, we'll find, we'll discover the means to quench the dukkha. This means dukkha will teach us how to quench it. If we understand dukkha thoroughly, within that will be the knowledge of how to quench it. So within dukkha is the quenching of dukkha. If we study carefully, if we are honest and open and sensitive, then dukkha will teach us how to quench dukkha. So this is the meaning of using a thorn to dig out the thorn. Let study things properly, study dukkha properly, and it will teach us the way to be completely free of all dukkha. Study the problem, and it will provide the answer. It's the same as with a fire. Wherever there is a fire, within it is the quenching, the going out of the fire. How are you going to find, where will you find the quenching of the fire if not in the fire itself? If the fire's here and we go looking for the quenching of the fire over there, we'll never find it. The only way to see the quenching of the fire is right there in the fire. We can't look for it anywhere else. And say the same with dukkha. The quenching of the dukkha is in the dukkha. To look for the quenching of dukkha somewhere else is an endless, foolish, impossible journey. The end of dukkha, the quenching of dukkha, is always right in the middle of the dukkha. So we actually ought to be quite thankful. We ought to have a great bit of gratitude towards dukkha, that it teaches us. Dukkha keeps teaching us and making us smarter and wiser. So we ought to be thankful that dukkha teaches us in this way. The only way, the only place to see the end of dukkha is in dukkha itself. We have a pond at Suanmok, which is meant to symbolize what we're talking about now. It's called the Sa Nalige. It represents, it's a single coconut tree in the middle of the sea of burning wax. And this symbolizes Nibbana is in the middle of dukkha. The only place to find Nibbana is in dukkha. And this is an important trick to Dhamma practice, for us to sublimate craving. There's all this craving in our lives, and if we can learn to sublimate it, to redirect it into aspiration, and then use that aspiration to get free of dhanha, to eliminate dhanha. Dhanha itself would just fight back and forth. So to try and fight dhanha with dhanha would just be a lot of conflict. But to sublimate the danha and use aspiration, this is a trick that will free us of dukkha. So we put out the fire in the fire. We find nibbana in dukkha. We use craving to eliminate craving. And so finally we say, thank you, dukkha, thank you, dukkha, thank you, dukkha, that you have made us smarter and wiser. Thank you, dukkha, that you have created the Buddha. Thank you, dukkha, because if it wasn't for dukkha, the Buddha, the one who completely understood and awakened to the end of dukkha, would have never risen in the world. So, thank you, dukkha. This may sound a little bit optimistic, but it's a healthy way to look at things. So when dukkha arises, welcome it properly, and we'll be able to quench dukkha. And so the matter of dukkha nirodha ariyasaccha, the noble truth of the quenching of dukkha, is now finished, and we end today's talk at this time.